patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. $4 a month gets you in there.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
Well, what a completely and totally normal first game of the season, eh, bud? Just as normal as they come. Just an everyday baseball game you see anytime you turn on a TV to watch the game.
You know what? I mean, obviously we're going to get into this, but like pitch count or pitch clock, like how did that affect baseball, right? If you Google it, the first result is like average length of game was down 25 minutes across the league. And I was like, I just watched a 5-hour game. Where did that come from?
No, this? And it's funny you bring that up because all 15 games in the books now, right? Average 9-inning time was 2 hours and 45 minutes. And the average 9-inning time last year on opening day was 3 hours and 3 minutes. So it did shave 18 minutes off the normal game. The shortest game yesterday was Detroit, Tampa Bay, and Cleveland, Seattle, both clocking in at 2 hours and 14 minutes. Longest game. Well, we watched the longest game, my man. And that clocked in at 3 hours, 40 minutes was Toronto and St. Louis. So
I don't
it
think
is
anyone
working.
Was complaining about that longer game, though. It was long
absolutely.
For good reasons.
Yeah, it was complete jam-packed. Insanity. There were a few times where I was like, this game is literally killing me. Like, it is taking years off my life. I can't handle 161 games like this. But
rail
man,
to rail, it was a great game.
It really was. In the first inning. It really was. What a great way to kick off this Toronto Blue Jays season. I mean, it was touch and go. There was some sloppy play. But, buddy, it was a fun game to watch as a fan. So, a win's a win.
Yep. Got out of there with the W. All right, let's do the rundown.
Yeah, let's get into it. We do have lots to talk about. Attention to detail is the new mantra of this 2023 Toronto Blue Jays team. Of course, you wouldn't be able to tell that that was the new mantra from watching last night's game, so we'll get into it. Kirk,
by the way, sorry, if last year was the sequel, Attention to Detail is a terrible name for the third episode. Like Guardians of the Galaxy 3, Attention to Detail. Actually, that's a movie I'd watch.
Yeah,
that sounds like fun. That sounds like a good time.
Yeah, Attention to Detail. The only downfall was the Blue Jays were spelling it A-T-E-N-T-I-O-N.
Yeah, it was a rough one.
Manoah, we're going to do a temperature check on him, see where we're both at. I don't think either of us are panicking, but he did have a rough outing. There were a few things that happened throughout the game that I think messed with him a little bit. One of them we're going to talk about, right? Alejandro Kirk's wardrobe malfunction, right? He had the pitchcom problem. Exactly. And then they wound up giving a ball out. So we'll talk that. We'll get into the tales of Tubo, right? It was like watching two different dudes play baseball, the offensive one and the defensive one. One was amazing and one was,
Yep.
The bullpen had some really bright spots. Had some dark spots. This was really the summation of the whole game, right?
Jimmy Garcia got the win with an ERA of 18. He's out there like a young Jose Barrios.
Is he younger than Jose Barrios? He's out there like an exact replica of Jose Barrios.
It's an expression, Scott. It just means like yesteryear's version, you know? Like I'm hoping... You know, because last year, remember how Barrios was not good for a while, but he was still getting wins for us? That was the reference. I don't know if you caught that or not.
I didn't. But now that you've explained it to me.
Okay.
I need it spoon-feed it. Don't be subtle, Adam.
Okay.
Then we're going to end on a high point, which is this new Toronto Blue Jays outfield. Eight. And they looked darn good yesterday.
They did. It was all the way around spectacular. Outfield?
I think I would give it a 10 out of 10 for yesterday's game, both on the defensive side of things and at the plate. All three of them. Kiermaier, Varsho, Springer. Wow, what a game he had. But we'll end the episode on that. So John Schneider, throughout this spring training, has been meticulous with his attempt to make attention to detail one of the things that all 26 men on this roster take to heart, really are trying to do to the best of their ability. And we saw it out of some players yesterday, right? That little extra, just being cognizant of what was going on in the game at the time. That play from Vladdy where he threw home to prevent the run in the seventh inning is a great example of that. Kevin Kiermaier going first to third when it looked like he probably shouldn't have even done it. Yeah.
I know that was crazy.
Just a great example of it, right? And then he was able to tag up on Vladdy's fly ball and score that tying run in, I don't even remember what inning. They scored a run and tied it so many times that I lost track. But no, attention to detail, man. It is good to see that that is a focus of this team. But yesterday was not a very good example of it. We are going to obviously talk Bo Bichette, but he was one of the biggest culprits of mental lapses. So I think that they're going to try and tighten that up. I really believe that this off day is going to do nothing but good things for this team, because it was such a wild one yesterday. It's going to be nice for them to kind of recalibrate, right? Just let forget everything that just happened and reset.
Well, it's funny to walk away with the win and feel like, ooh, good thing we have an off day so we can recalibrate. Not a nice but odd spot to be in.
Yeah, it really is. So we will move on from attention to detail, but I did wish to start the show with that just because it has been such a focal point of all of this coaching staff since spring training started. And it really was a funny game to watch, knowing that that's their new focus and it just didn't come to fruition at all. But let's get into Alek Manoah, because we're probably going to wind up spending a little bit of time on this. The big man, the ace, if you will, of this staff, got to start his first opening day with the Toronto Blue Jays. And it was kind of cool. I don't know if you saw the video the Blue Jays released of this with Pete Walker and John Schneider telling Alek Manoah that he was going to get the start yesterday. And it was really heartwarming, man. It was pretty cool. Like, Manoah's just like smile ear to ear. And it was just, you could tell he was just like, yes, this was my goal. This is what I was going for. Accomplished, you know, that sense of accomplishment.
Yeah.
And it was cool too. John Schneider ended that little meeting with the first of many, right?
Yeah. And who knows, maybe 18 years from now, he'll get to sing the national anthem at his last opening day. That was one of the coolest moments, watching Adam Wainwright sing the national anthem. I had goosebumps, buddy.
It was so cool. No, I'm here. It was so cool, man. It was so cool. And just the eruption of the crowd gave me goosebumps too.
I don't think it was an announced thing. I think it kind of caught everybody off guard, right?
Everyone a little off guard. Yeah. Yeah, it was fun. So Alek Manoah takes the bump yesterday. Struggled a little with control in the first inning. You know, gave up that run. The Blue Jays already had a 3-run lead. So that was the thing that surprised me a little bit is normally if you give Alek Manoah a lead, like a 3-0 lead like that, he settles in naturally and just kind of goes about his business. But
he's not overdo anything.
No, he stays within himself. That wasn't really the case yesterday. It was really interesting because I don't know how you felt, dude, but he just didn't seem comfortable the whole time he was on the mound.
Well, I don't want to even put this into the world, but this is in my brain, and I'm just thinking the feelings I have about how Alek Manoah did yesterday kind of similar to how I felt after his first ever playoff game. I hope this isn't a trend, Scott, but so far 2 for 2 with his like big stage starts have not gone well.
Are you legitimately worried, though?
What I'm asking you is Alek Manoah not a big game pitcher?
I don't think that's the case. I really don't think that that's the case. I really believe that this game yesterday needs to be isolated and taken out of the rest of his body of work for a few reasons. Number one, this is the first time that Alek Manoah in a regular season game was using PitchCom and was calling his game. When the Scherzer and the Verlander, where he was kind of calling the pitches to Kirk that was coming. He was struggling a little bit with it. And I know that Buck Martinez mentioned on the broadcast. I mean, Buck was hating that he was using PitchCom. I'm not going that far. I think PitchCom is a very useful tool.
Every catcher who calls a game or as a broadcaster is going to be annoyed with that, right?
Absolutely. For sure. But he hadn't done it before. Even last year, PitchCom was obviously completely available to everybody. But Alek Manoah chose to have Kirky call the games. And with the pitch clock and just needing to get into that faster rhythm, it just makes a lot of sense for pitchers to, for the most part, call their own games from time to time, you know, just to keep that rhythm moving. And he just looked uncomfortable doing it. I don't know if it was the pitch clock or if it was the pitch calm itself or if it was nerves from game one. He just, again, didn't seem like the dialed in Manoah that Blue Jays fans are used to seeing.
Well, Scott, it's in my brain and it's all I can think about now. I'm trying to rack my brain. I'm sure there has been a September outing against the Yankees, like playoff implications on the line, and he just shows up and balls out. But not that opening day is like a high stakes game.
Yeah.
But it is a big moment, right? And it just reeks of like, maybe it's youth. Maybe it's all it is youth. But it just, I feel like, I don't know if he's gripping the ball too hard or whatever cliche you want to throw out at it.
It's early too, though, dude. It's early too, right? Game one of 162.
Just saying, maybe this is a factor in him starting game two of the playoff series this fall. I don't know. I'm trying to talk myself out of spiraling right now is what's happening. So I just need you to help me cope so that I don't panic because I have no interest in a pitcher that is a Cy Young all season and then has a 5 career ERA in the playoffs. You know what I mean?
We're taking two games that I really, there are so many different factors going on here. Like if you really wish to break down that game one of the wild card game, like he just gave up that 3-run home run. And then he only allowed one more run for the rest of the time pitching. Like it happens. I just feel like comparing these two games are apples and oranges.
You're right. Look, and it's a very small sample size. It's two outings.
Yes.
But what do we always say? A good small sample size better than a bad better small sample size.
It is. It is. And I think this is a natural transition to this next topic because I do believe that one of the things that really threw Manoah off, and yes, he wasn't really dialed in the whole time, but in that fourth inning, right, when he kind of gave up the big home run there, they had switched from Manoah calling his pitches to Kirk calling his pitches. Now, Kirk was struggling with his pitch calm to get it going so that they could do the reverse, right? And as he's struggling with this equipment malfunction, he ran out of time and the umpire called a ball against them, which honestly, I'm all for the pitch clock. I think we both are. I think we've made that very clear. But my God, dude, some common sense would sure go a long way in a scenario like that. Like what's calling a ball against him going to, how is that speeding the game up?
Okay. Okay, so let's talk pitch clock and then real quick and then get back to Alejandro Kirk so we aren't spending 15 minutes on the pitch clock. But there were several instances that made you kind of raise your eyebrows yesterday at how things, like, the ump has so much discretionary power as to like when the pitch clock starts, right?
Yeah.
Like if you're the batter and you swing out of your shorts and fall down, it's up to the umpire behind the plate to decide, okay, like give him a moment to like get up, dust himself off, and then start the clock, right? I saw highlights in the Mets game of Pete Alonso. There was a foul. Pete Alonso's on first base. There's a foul ball, but he obviously takes off on contact, goes down to two, jogs back to first. Well, he wasn't jogging fast enough. So there was a call. There was a pitch clock violation on the base runner, Pete Alonso.
Oh, my God.
He wasn't hustling back to first enough, which is just dumb for so many reasons, right? Like, these are details that need to get worked out. Another issue that I had, there was, I think it was in the ninth inning of the Blue Jays game, pitch count violation on the, or pitch clock, I keep calling it pitch count, pitch clock violation on the Cardinals pitcher while Vladdy was in the box. But it was one of those like split second, bang, bang kind of calls. He's just getting ready to deliver his pitch. Illegal pitch is called, but he still delivers the ball. And yeah, I think he airmailed it or whatever. But like, we are going to run into a situation this year where that pitch gets thrown and the batter swings, right? And like, okay, if it's a strike, you just say, no, that was an illegal pitch. That's a ball. Like, don't worry about it. But what happens if that's a ball in play? Right? What happens if that's a game-winning home run? What happens if even that's a sharp grounder down the third baseline and Vladdy's saying, no, I defer the penalty. I'll take the triple that I just hit. And then Nolan Arenado's going, well, I saw time was called, so I didn't even make a play on it, right? Like, it's one of these, it's a messy situation waiting to happen, right?
This is where, again, I can't reiterate it enough. Common sense. Like, if all of this discretion is given to the umpire, use it. Like, yeah. I don't know.
Well, hey,
the truth is, dude, the truth is there are going to be some kinks to work out in this new system. And I think they are still working at it. And the dream is, if there is an ongoing problem with this, that they're not so hard-headed as to not try and tweak it.
My only concern, I love your optimism. My only concern with that is this is the same group of people who can't be trusted to call a strike zone accurately. This is a union of workers who love putting their stamp on the game.
Yes.
Not all of them, but enough of them, right?
The ump show exists, right?
So if this is a way to like get back at a guy, right? And like the whole hurry up offense, not the hurry up clock where it's like, hey, this guy's I don't get along with this pitcher so well, right? Or he made me look bad last game, or this catcher or this hitter or whatever. Maybe you get a quicker starting of that clock than usual, right? Maybe things are just called a little bit tighter. You know, it's,
yeah,
I don't like it.
The double standards is what was bothering me yesterday. You know, like, Kirk got dirt in his eye, shut it down. Yep. Let's get it out here, you know, and that's good.
Yep.
But then his equipment malfunctions and they're like, no.
Yeah.
Ball.
That's so sad. it's messy.
What's done is done. Didn't wind up costing them the game anyways. They did win. The W is all that matters. And this game's behind them. And I think that's how the Blue Jays as a team are going to see this and move forward. But just as a fan, that those were little things that really stuck out to me that just got in my craw, you know?
I do think that we're going to have loads of instances over the next 161 games where we are screaming to the high heavens that we lost the game because of this stupid rule. But I think we also just need to compose ourselves and remember that there's probably also going to be a handful of games where we won because of that rule, where it does go our way. So like, as much as it's easy to get frustrated in the moment, and I know I can just crystal ball, see all the podcasts where we're doing that. We're saying we got ripped off. We got a called third strike that shouldn't have been, or blah, blah, blah. It is going to go both ways. So future Adam, just relax and remember that we're going to steal a couple along the way as well. It is what it is. Alejandro Kirk, anything else to add?
No, not really. That's basically what went down, and it is what it is. And I just hope that as games get played and scenarios like this come up, that Rob Manfred and Major League Baseball can go to the umpires and kind of give a list of, listen, this is what we need you to try and concentrate on doing. You know, use a little bit of discretion, use some common sense, dirt in the eyes, equipment malfunction, stuff like this shouldn't be where they're trying to save 2 seconds and then penalize a team. That's not a Pete Alonso not running hard enough back to first base is not where they should be trying to save that 1 second, right? Reed. So we'll move on from there. While we are talking pitching, we will get into the bullpen here. To start with, I do wish to just kind of calm the storm that is Blue Jays fandom a little bit on Tim Mayza. Okay. Listen, I understand that the last two times Tim Mayza pitched was when he got blown up in the wild card game and helped contribute. Contribute was not the reason for, but contribute to the complete collapse of that 8-1 lead they had against the Mariners. And then yesterday, yeah, he got hit. It was a bummer. And if you look at those hits he gave up, there were a couple of them that felt like the balls had eyes. You know, like for the most part, it's not like he was completely rocked. So that's good news. Again, the W is the W. But I know that there's a lot of hate going Tim Mays's way that truly is a little unwarranted. And he is a good pitcher. And you just need to look at his numbers in 2021 to remember he is a very important member of this bullpen and the only lefty back there. So he's going to get the ball. Jimmy Garcia. I mean, we brought this up right off the top, right, buddy? 18 ERA, but he's got a W.
The W. Yep, sure does.
Now, on the positive side, buddy, Eric Swanson. Wow. That was fun to watch, man. The dude was painting corners.
Yeah.
Got those strikeouts.
Yeah, good to watch. I feel good about Eric Swanson. I think the bullpen, it was just one of those days.
Yeah.
You know?
The whole team lacked sharpness. Like there were some guys who were really dialed in, and then there were some that just didn't seem like they were ready for the regular season. And you don't want to harp too much on game one and like a
we're
win.
Really, yeah, we're nitpicking details here, but this is why baseball is 162 games. This is why it'll never be a 16-game season. Like it's the back of the baseball card means something, right? So
the mark of Madman, though.
He looked good. Yeah. 3 up, 3 down.
He was the one guy who came in and just pedal to the metal.
2 strikeouts as well.
Did what he was supposed to do. And again, there were a lot of scenarios throughout the game where you were like, all right, this is a clutch moment. Let's see how focused. Let's see how their attention to detail is here. And then they just would drop the ball. But Romano came in and was lights out, did exactly what was expected of him.
I had no doubts that Romano was going to come in when we were in that 9th inning and the Jays had just tied it up. And then they show that shot of Romano down in the bullpen, looking through the chain link fence, dumping the water on his head. I'm like, oh, the Markham Madman is in full mode right now.
Yeah,
he's
going into psycho mode. Exactly. Yeah.
So, but here's the thing is like, I mean, we could talk clutch all we want, but it's my biggest criticism, and I'm not the only one who feels this way, is that he is an entirely different pitcher when there's base runners on.
Yes.
Right. If he came in if he didn't go three up, three down, and one of those hitters got on base, now it's Paul Goldschmidt at the plate.
Yeah.
Was the fourth batter he was going to face. MVP Paul Goldschmidt with a base runner on and these new, like, pick-off attempt restrictions and stuff and the pitch clock. I was not looking forward to seeing Jordan Romano with a base runner with new rules against NL MVP Paul Goldschmidt. That felt like he needed a three up, three down inning or that was over. I had like that. There was no gray area for me in my confidence with him. Was three up, three down or we lose.
Especially with the way that game went.
Yeah. So literally every pitcher or every batter he faced felt like a must get. And he got them. So confidence level in Romano right now is 10 out of 10.
Okay, so now we are going to talk Bo Bichette. So this is going to go from positivity to a little bit of negativity here. The dude had a very rough game in the field. There is a, I wouldn't say a large group of the fan base, but there is a vocal group of the fan base.
Vocal.
Who almost celebrates when he has a bad defensive game. And I can't really wrap my head around it. I mean, being on Twitter, of course, and Arden Zwelling, every time he comes on the show is like, you know, Scott, you got to stop acting like the entire Blue Jays fandom is represented on Twitter, because it's not. And that's true. I am aware of that. But there was a lot of rhetoric towards Bo. He should be playing second base. They should move him to third. This guy is not a shortstop. And to that, I say, I don't know how you think moving him to third or second is going to help with bonehead throws that he shouldn't be making. And that's really what we're talking about here, right? Yeah. Like he just, that play in the first where he airmailed it over Vladdy's head. He went deep into the hole. Great, showed amazing range. He probably shouldn't have even gotten to that ball. Mm-hmm. But like, play within yourself. Nobody would have made that throw and gotten the out. So hold the ball.
Yeah, it's weird though. Like the optics of a shortstop. I can't think of a time I've ever seen any infielder pick up a, other than like a little soft rolling grounder. Right. Like the soft ones where they're running in and they're almost at the pitcher's mound and it took them 4 seconds to get there. You see them eat it all the time. But anything that's hit with any sort of speed and the ball gets there quickly, I've never seen anyone not make that throw. And I don't mean like just throw the ball. It just doesn't happen. You don't just see Nolan Arenado make a nice stab at the foul line, scoop up the ball, and then just sit on it and throw it back to the pitcher. Do you?
I don't know.
He should have just eaten it, but it's just, it also would have been like a weird, it is like goes against the baseball instincts a little bit to be like, this ball got to be quick, but.
To quote John Snyder, attention to detail, baby. Like there is no, like, you just can't convince me. And you are correct. Baseball instincts kicked in there, and I think that's why he made the throw. But he's at a point in his career where he needs to understand his limitations and play within them. You see it from Matt Chapman all the time. You'll see Matt Chapman running in a ball and then just kind of concede, be like, okay, I've seen it several times. Yeah.
For short, slow grounders, sure.
For sure,
never for anything that's hit at him hard, though.
No, but I mean that ball wasn't hit that hard to Bo. I mean, I get what you're saying. I'm not letting him off the hook on that one. Like that was just a bullshit baseball play. It shouldn't have happened. He should have never thrown that ball.
Yes and no. I mean, after watching, as soon as I could tell by the release angle that this was going into the crowd.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and it was almost comical because it was the first inning. It was the first defensive play he had all year. We just spent all off season going gold glove season for Bo Bichette. You know, like,
yeah.
So it was funny to see, but I do feel like there's a little bit of Monday morning quarterback going on here where we are able to see in hindsight, of course he shouldn't have made that throw. But if that throw isn't into the crowd, like that's.
All I'm saying is
I don't know.
Making that throw and not making that throw is the difference between a bad defensive shortstop and a good defensive shortstop.
No.
And I truly believe that. I truly believe that Bo Bichette has it within him to be an average defensive shortstop. That was the big prediction I made. I'm like, Bo Bichette's going to take major steps forward defensively, and he's going to be an average defensive shortstop this season, which is going to catapult him into the MVP talks because his offense is off the charts.
Yeah, I guess I just... I mean, we also differ on the Springer-Bichette collision, right? Like, and how that went down, right? Like, I want guys that are going for it. I think, generally speaking, and I'll take the lumps when there's a boneheaded throw here and there or a collision in center field or whatever. Like, I don't know. I want my stars to want to be stars.
I don't think we differ there, but I think that there is some baseball acumen to be used when it comes to stuff like this, and that experience is acquired, and that Bo has enough experience to know when he shouldn't try to make a throw. Like, the guy was a quick runner too. The whole thing shouldn't have happened.
Sure, but okay, we're about to end the show on a high note here with Kevin Kiermaier and the spectacular outfield. We saw a nice diving catch from George Springer, a nice sliding diving catch from Kevin Kiermaier in center field. Like, I want my guys diving for the ball. I don't want everybody taking it on the hop. I don't want everybody like playing up soft, and I don't want everybody just like eating the ball every chance they get. I want my guys going for it, man.
Well, I feel like we're saying the same thing. Like, I feel like we're arguing, but I'm saying the same thing. Like, I want my guys going all out, but use your freaking head. Like, there's just some plays that can't be made.
Okay, but let's talk this Kevin Kiermaier thing, and then we'll come back and we'll get back to Vladdy. This is just going to be a sloppy episode. But Kevin Kiermaier, that, like, sliding catch in the eighth or ninth, if he doesn't get to that, and that, you know, if he misjudges it, lacks the self-awareness to hold up and play it on the hop or whatever, and he goes for it, but fails, that's a potentially inside the park home run because he's coming in very shallow. That ball's going all the way to the wall.
Play the scoreboard. Play the scoreboard. He had to make that catch, or they're up by 2 runs, right? It's the first inning, nobody on, and Bo airmailed it. You can't convince me that was just, don't worry about that play. Like, I guarantee Bo got talked to after that and was like, dude.
Yeah, dude, make a better throw, but I still want making the throw.
Don't throw it.
Okay, someone in the walk-off grounds crew here, find me a clip of any infielder not throwing the ball in that situation. It probably exists. I just can't picture it. I just can't ever picture any infielder physically not making a throw, like holding the ball when a ball was hit. Maybe I'm misremembering this play. I'm going to have to go back and rewatch it. It in my head, it feels like a harder hit than I'm expecting, but
I don't know.
Maybe it was a weird
He had to run deep towards the third baseline, and like his momentum was taking him the other way. It wasn't that hard hit. I don't know. I mean, for those of you watching who are looking for this clip, Carlos Correa, look into him.
Does he not throw it a bunch?
He throws it every time that he has a legit opportunity to get an out, but he's not going to airmail it when there's no chance. Like, even if he hit Vladdy, dude, even if he literally nailed the throw, it was going to be safe. So why throw it? But anyways.
Whatever. All right, let's talk. You just said Vladdy. Let's talk Vladdy because Vladdy had a good game.
He had a great game. He was one of the dudes where attention to detail actually came into play here. I mean, that grounder he took with runners, I think it was the bases were loaded, right?
I think so.
In the seventh, one out, and he took that grounder and he went home with just a rocket. And it was the perfect play. It was exactly what needed to be done, especially after you watched Bo try and turn a double play there, the play before, and a run scored where he could have got him at home. And that was probably the play to do there.
Vladdy has above average arm strength, right? Like, that was always one of the reasons when he was being brought up to put
that they wanted him at third. Exactly. Right?
For that arm strength. So sometimes I think that's a factor in like the disappointment in him playing first. It's like, oh, we're wasting his arm by having him at first base. But like, yeah, that was a nice moment that like comes up a few times a month where he's able to, and it's sure nice that he's got a rock of an arm, an accurate arm. Doesn't have the range of Bo Bichette, but Bo Bichette salivates at Vladdy's arm. That's for sure.
I really think that this is going to be a big year for Vladdy, just as an all-around ball player. I mean, he already won the Gold Glove at first, so obviously he is a bit of a defensive stalwart as it is. But just the addition to the coaching staff of Don Mattingly and the prowess that he brings to playing first base and being able to impart that wisdom on him. I mean, they were showing clips of Vladdy and Donnie Baseball, and they were just attached at the hip, man, all spring training. It was great to see this little relationship developing between the two of them. I mean, Don Mattingly, one of the great hitters of all time, and played an excellent first base. And just to have that kind of experience that a guy like Vladdy can go to, it just increases the winning culture on this team.
Okay, let's end full outfield mode.
Yes,
because
a little positivity.
A very bright spot in yesterday's game, which again was an awesome game from start to finish.
Yeah,
and we got the win, so it feels and weird we to even say here's a bright spot. But I think just with Manoa struggling, with the weird stuff with Kirk, the bullpen being kind of weird, and then the up and down day
Bo struggling in the field. Yeah.
Outfield was great. 10 out of 10.
By the way, credit where credit's due, because Bo Bichette had a hell of a game at the plate.
4 for 6. Yep.
I mean, if plus minus existed in baseball, like it does in hockey, it's just weird that Vladdy can go 4 for 6 and come out at zero, at even.
but yes, I know what you're saying.
Yeah. Anyways, right. Back to the outfield. Sorry to derail you here.
No. You want to start with the new guy or the other new guy?
Let's start with the other new guy. Let's start with Dalton.
Oh, that's the way you went. Okay. I was going left to right. I was thinking Dalton was the new guy and Kiermaier was the other new guy.
Okay.
Doesn't matter. Okay. Dalton Varsho, we're going left to right then. The short king himself started the season with a base hit and then 0-for-4 the rest of the game.
Great. Good. Great first at bat. He had some really good plays in the outfield as well. His defensive prowess without a doubt came into play. Yeah, he had a good game. You know, first big league game as a Blue Jay.
He didn't have, I mean, you're not going to get a highlight every game. And it just so happens that Kiermaier and Springer both had highlight catches yesterday. Yeah. So it kind of feels like defensively a little bit of a disappointing game for Varsho, but it wasn't. Very solid. Like there was never a moment where it was hit to him where I had any sort of butthole puckering. Like
I've always had
with Lourdes Gurriel Jr.
Yeah, agreed. So. And let's give him a little bit of credit here on that 0-for-4 after that first hit, because one of those at bats was a sacrifice fly that scored a run. So, you know, getting it done is very important. And that was what we can say happened with Dalton Varsho. Going to center field now, Kevin Kiermaier really impressed me yesterday, dude.
Yeah, tip of the cap to Kevin Kiermaier. Impressed in all facets of the game, I think.
Truly. I mean, the play that stands out to me, and I know we kind of touched on it off the top here, but like when he went from first to third, like late in the game, down by a run, just such a heads up move, something that this team has lacked is base running intelligence.
So this was George Springer at the plate. We had runners on the corners. I believe it was Whit Merrifield on third, Kiermaier on first. And then yes. George did what he did basically all game long and hit a little weird blooper into with center eyes. Field. Into, yeah. Yeah, with eyes. And Kiermaier scored, or Merrifield scored. I think that tied it up.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, Schulman saying Kiermaier's at third. And I'm like, how did he get to third? What? He must have been on second.
Yeah.
I thought, he must have, like, it must have been a double when he hit, because everything about that, I mean,
he talk shouldn't about
baseball
have
instincts was like, the speed that he has is underrated, but the read that he got on that shortstop going out for it, like,
yes,
because initially, he has to be trepidatious going to two, right? He can't get doubled off. So he has to go to two with like hold up halfway in case he catches it. But then, I mean, when you watch the replay, you see there is definitely a moment where it kicks in and he goes, oh, he's not getting to that. I'm gone. And did not think twice, right? Like there's that hesitation will kill you kind of a thing. And he committed.
There was none of it.
He committed. He knew as soon as he had the read, like that shortstop wasn't getting there. Not only did he decide, oh, I'm going to two. As soon as he knew that shortstop wasn't getting there, he knew I'm going to three, and he went for it. And I think even the shortstop was surprised because the shortstop, when he did pick it up off the bounce, immediately went to second with it. Didn't even make a play at third. I don't think anybody expected him to be going first to third on that blooper into shallow center.
No. There's no way they thought that's what he was doing. And this is a play that, and I love Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and Teoscar Hernandez. That is a play. No way one of those two dudes is standing on third. Zero chance.
Kevin Kiermaier can do that. I think Whit Merrifield also would have done that. And then my third and I think final blue. No, you know what? I think Vladdy might have done it, but for a different reason.
Yeah,
I think Vladdy might have done it because he just wants it.
Yeah,
he plays with that reckless abandon. But I think the third player on the Blue Jays that I think smartly would have done it is Kevin Biggio.
Yes, I think that's a safe bet.
Underrated speed and good. Maybe Springer. Yeah, maybe Springer.
Because I know Springer had an incredible game as well, going left to right. We'll end on George Springer. 5 for 5 out of the leadoff spot. I mean, the dude was on base all game long. He had that incredible diving catch in right field. Dude, if this guy can stay healthy, if moving him out of center field to right field does what the Blue Jays brass is hoping it does, which is give him an opportunity to stay on the field for more of that 162 game season. This team is really, really deadly when it comes to the offensive side of the game.
Yeah, I mean, everything about George's game yesterday was great. It was 5 for 6, by the way. I don't remember which inning he got out in, but I know people are going to nitpick that detail. So 5 for 6.
Attention to detail here on the walk-off, too.
There you go. Attention to detail. Loved everything about it. Made that nice diving catch out in right field. Forgive me for not knowing which inning it was. The whole game was a blur yesterday. So much happened.
So many ups and downs.
Yeah, I don't really know what else to say about George. Pray to God he has a healthy season and can maintain an .833 batting average all year. I mean, it'll probably come down a bit, but
yeah,
I'll take it.
Oh no, George isn't hitting .800 anymore.
I mean, if I'm going down the order here, the only person that had kind of a quiet day, I don't really know if I can find one. I mean, Kirk went 1 for 5. Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
You know, Varsho went 1 for 5, but had the sack fly, like you said. Guerrero had that. Well, he went 2 for 4, but had that sack fly to get the go-ahead run. Bichette went 4 for 6. Springer, 5 for 6. Chapman went 3 for 5. Merrifield went 0 for 3, but he did get on base. I think he had 2 walks. Kiermaier went 2 for 4. Even Biggio looked like old Biggio. Drew a great walk in the
buddy. That was
inning.
So funny, eh? That I just or love that. The ninth. That Hicks is in there throwing 103 high heat, and John Schneider's like, "Get me Biggio.
Get me Biggio off the bench, yeah, baby.
He's due."
Hey, you know what? Biggio looked good, man.
He did,
that's,
man. He
that's
did.
All. That's all you want from Kevin Biggio is just get on base. You know,
yeah,
like just work that strike zone the way you know it, and yeah, it's just a bunch of good at bats, you know, like in a game that was filled with highlights, even the uneventful things like a walk were interesting, you know, like I don't know, maybe it's just because baseball's back and I was out on spring training, but I'm fully back. I'm so happy that we have a day off now because
it's just anticlimactic
Friday for me.
They scored 10 runs on 19 hits. I don't think we're going to see the offense like this every game, but any team that can pull that sort of score out on any given day, yeah, that's a playoff team. So great to see the Jays get that first win.
Speaking of offense and things being up, stolen bases were up yesterday. Now, small sample size is one game. 21 stolen bases across the league yesterday.
Do you know how many the first game of 2022 had?
I don't know, but what I do know is that the league-wide average for stolen bases in 2022 was 0.51 steals per game. So about one stolen base every other game.
Which was nearly more than double. Yesterday was more than double that.
So, yeah, like a 40% increase is great.
Look at that then. Look at that. More stolen bases, more than double the stolen bases of last year. The games were 18 minutes shorter on average than last year. The rules are working the way that Major League Baseball was hoping they'd work.
Rules are working. Some details, some kinks to work out with the pitch clock and the enforcement of the pitch clock. Mm-hmm. I think the pitch clock itself is good, but
yes,
the enforcement of it and those weird
gray
like
area
moments
need to be worked out.
Going back to
the
first NFL ball
moment.
Too slow. That's not good. Yeah, I do wonder about when there's a pitch clock violation, the guy delivers it anyways, and there's bound to be a hit at some point this year. Across the league somewhere. And that's going to be a weird, messy situation.
Agreed.
Needs to be addressed. All right. Good episode, my friend. I had fun.
Yeah. Thanks again.
Sunday, we have a long toss.
I was just going to bring that up. Look at us. Look at the connection here between us. Yes. Long toss on Sunday. It is back, baby. We've got Baseball Jen joining us. Friend of the show, Garth Yorgi. We have Lewis Foster, the Australian pitcher now in the Ontario system, and we're gonna pick his brain on where he's at in his baseball career because he's getting close. He's starting to be scouted by some colleges in the U.S. dude, like the kid is actually really moving up the ranks, which is cool. And then from the flight deck, Connor is going to be joining us.
Connor with a K. Cool.
Connor with a K. The whole gang will be there. That is going to be from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern. That is live. You can join us on YouTube. Feel free to get in there and comment and get questions in because we do keep an eye on that chat. It's a fun place to spend the evening on a Sunday after the ball game. So you can follow along with us there at Walk Off Podcast on Twitter, The Walk Off Podcast on Instagram. And we have been getting quite a few people DMing us for the Discord link. And so if you would like to be a part of that Discord, which is just baseball crazy and Blue Jay nuts right across the board, talking Blue Jays, talking all the stuff going on in Major League Baseball almost 24/7, because we've got people literally from all over the world and all different time zones. So wherever you're from, feel free to get in on the fun. Again, just send us a DM on Twitter. So that's the messenger part, or on Instagram.
Speaking of global Blue Jays fans, Dunedin, no.
Fair Which Bob? Dinkum. Oh, right. Yes, Phil.
Phil in Australia, Fair Dinkum, got his walk-off coffee mug for being a Patreon member.
Yes, he did. He sent it. He DM'd us on Twitter and sent us the picture of it. So, Phil, there you go, bud. Thanks for being a Patreon member and supporting the channel. But also, good on you. Now you got a real classy mug for your coffee.
My favorite part of that screenshot, though, and maybe I'll throw it up at the end of this, is that I'll just show you right now. So here's the coffee mug. It's, of course, out of focus and dark. But at the top of this screenshot is
the group baseball group chat.
This is It's the group chat with Hey Commie. And literally the screenshot, of course, was that was a weird one with it going under Chapman. He shouldn't have even thrown it. So that's the Bo Bichette error throw there. So, of course, that got included in this cool screenshot here.
Yeah. All right, walk-off community. Thank you so much for all the views, for always following along. We do really appreciate you.
I started calling them the grounds crew, Scott, because we couldn't do it without them. We're the on-field talent, but this wouldn't happen without them. So they're the grounds crew now, okay? Can we get that to catch on?
Finally, we have something we can call the walk-off fans, the grounds crew, and I love
grounds
it, buddy.
Grounds crew, right? There you go. All right.
I love it. All right. Thanks, everybody. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Walk-Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Osborne with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.